There was no reply from the empty rock corridor. Mr. World shouldered the body as if it weighed very little, and he opened the pixie diorama and dropped the body beside the still, covering it with its long black raincoat. He would dispose of it that evening, he decided, and he grinned his scarred grin. Hiding a body on a battlefield would almost be too easy. Nobody would ever notice. Nobody would care. For a little while there was silence in that place. And then a gruff voice, which was not Mr. World's, cleared its throat in the shadows and said,
"Good start."
Chapter 18. They tried to stand off the soldiers, but the men fired and killed them both. So the song's wrong about the jail, but that's put in for poetry. You can't always have things like they are in poetry. Poetry ain't what you'd call truth. There ain't room enough in the verses. A singer's commentary on The Ballad of Sam Bass, a treasury of American folklore. None of this can actually be happening. If it makes you more comfortable, you could simply think of it as metaphor. Religions are, by definition, metaphors, after all. God is a dream, a hope, a woman, an ironist, a father, a city, a house of many rooms, a watchmaker who left his prized chronometer in the desert, someone who loves you. Even, perhaps, against all evidence, a celestial being whose only interest is to make sure your football team, army, business, or marriage thrives, prospers, and triumphs over all opposition. Religions are places to stand and look and act, vantage points from which to view the world. So none of this is happening. Such things could not occur in this day and age. Never a word of it is literally true, although it all happened. And the next thing that happened, happened like this. At the foot of Lookout Mountain, which is scarcely more than a very high hill, men and women were gathered around a small bonfire in the rain. They stood beneath the trees, which provided poor cover, and they were arguing. The Lady Kali, with her ink-black skin and white sharp teeth, said,
"It is time."
Anansi, with lemon-yellow gloves and silvering hair, shook his head.
"We can wait. While we can wait, we should wait."
There was a murmur of disagreement from the crowd.
"No, listen, he's right,"
said an old man with iron-gray hair. Chernabog. He was holding a small sledgehammer, resting the head of it on his shoulder.
"They have the high ground. The weather is against us. This is madness to begin this now."
Something that looked a little like a wolf and a little more like a man grunted and spat on the forest floor.
"When better to attack them, Dadushka? Shall we wait until the weather clears when they expect it? I say we go now. I say we move."
"There are clouds between us and them,"
pointed out Istin of the Hungarians. He had a fine black mustache, a large dusty black hat, and the grin of a man who makes his living selling aluminum siding and new roofs and gutters to senior citizens, but who always leaves town the day after the checks clear, whether the work is done or not. A man in an elegant suit who had, until now, said nothing, put his hands together, stepped into the firelight, and made his point succinctly and clearly. There were nods and mutters of agreement. A voice came from one of the three warrior women who comprised the Morrigan, standing so close together in the shadows that they had become an arrangement of blue tattooed limbs and dangling crow's wings. She said,
"It doesn't matter whether this is a good time or a bad time. This is the time. They have been killing us. They will continue to kill us, whether we fight or not. Perhaps we will triumph. Perhaps we will die. Better to die together on the attack like gods than to die fleeing and singly like rats in a cellar."
Another murmur, this time one of deep agreement. She had said it for all of them. Now was the time.
"The first head is mine,"
said a very tall Chinese man with a rope of tiny skulls around his neck. He began to walk slowly and intently up the mountain, shouldering a staff with a curved blade at the end of it, like a silver moon. Even nothing can last forever. He might have been there, been nowhere, for 10 minutes or for 10,000 years. It made no difference. Time was an idea for which he no longer had any need. He could no longer remember his real name. He felt empty and cleansed in that place that was not a place. He was without form and void. He was nothing. And into that nothing, a voice said,
"Hohoka, cousin, we got to talk."
And something that might once have been Shadow said,
"Whiskey Jack?"
"Yeah, you are a hard man to hunt down when you're dead. You didn't go to any of the places I figured. I had to look all over before I thought of checking here. Say, you ever find your tribe?"
Shadow remembered the man and the girl in the disco beneath the spinning mirror ball.
"I guess I found my family. But no, I never found my tribe."
"Sorry to have to disturb you."
"No, you aren't sorry. Let me be. I got what I wanted. I'm done."
"They are coming for you. They are going to revive you."
"But I'm done,"
said Shadow.
"It was all over and done."
"No such thing,"
said Whiskey Jack.
"Never any such thing. We'll go to my place. You want a beer?"
He guessed he would like a beer at that.
"Sure."
"Get me one, too. There's a cooler outside the door."
They were in his shack. Shadow opened the door to the shack with hands it seemed to him he had not possessed moments before. There was a plastic cooler filled with chunks of river ice out there, and in the ice a dozen cans of Budweiser. He pulled out a couple of cans of beer and then sat in the doorway and looked out over the valley. They were at the top of a hill near a waterfall, swollen with melting snow and runoff. It fell in stages maybe 70 feet below them, maybe 100. The sun reflected from the ice which sheathed the trees that overhung the waterfall basin. The churning noise as the water crashed and fell filled the air.
"Where are we?"
"Where you were last time. My place. You planning on holding onto my bud till it warms up? They aren't good like that."
Shadow stood up and passed him the can of beer.
"You didn't have a waterfall outside your place last time I was here."
Whiskey Jack said nothing. He popped the top of the bud and drank half the can in one long, slow swallow. Then he said,
"You remember my nephew, Harry Bluejay, the poet? He traded his Buick for your Winnebago, remember?"
"Sure. I didn't know he was a poet."
"Best damn poet in America,"
he said. He drained the rest of his can of beer, belched, and got another can, while Shadow popped open his own can of beer, and the two men sat outside on a rock by the pale green ferns in the morning sun, and they watched the falling water and they drank their beer. There was still snow on the ground in the places where the shadows never lifted. The earth was muddy and wet.
"Harry was diabetic,"
continued Whiskey Jack.
"It happens. Too much. You people came to America, you take our sugar cane, potatoes, and corn. Then you sell us potato chips and caramel popcorn, and we're the ones who get sick. He'd won a couple of prizes for his poetry. There were people in Minnesota who wanted to put his poems into a book. He was driving to Minnesota in a sports car to talk to them. He had traded your bagel for a yellow Miata. The doctors said they think he went into a coma while he was driving. Went off the road. Ran the car into one of your road signs. Too lazy to look at where you are. To read the mountains and the clouds. You people need road signs everywhere. And so Harry Bluejay went away forever. Went to live with Brother Wolf. So I said, nothing keeping me there any longer. I came north. Good fishing up here."
"I'm sorry about your nephew."
"Me too. So now I'm living here in the north. Long way from white man's diseases. White man's roads. White man's road signs. White man's yellow Miatas. White man's caramel popcorn."
"White man's beer?"
Whiskey Jack looked at the can.
"When you people finally give up and go home, you can leave us the Budweiser breweries."
"Where are we? Am I on the tree? Am I dead? Am I here? I thought everything was finished. What's real?"
"Yes."
"Yes? What kind of an answer is yes?"
"It's a good answer. True answer, too."
"Are you a god as well?"
Whiskey Jack shook his head.
I'm a culture hero. We do the same shit gods do. We just screw up more and nobody worships us.